in association with Newsarama.com. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntrus. Today, a conversation with the Atomic Revolver Studio, a collective of creators who work primarily in comics, and they feature B. Clay Moore, Tony Moore, Jeremy Hahn, Seth Peck, Jason Aaron, and Jason Latour. They've come together in a few cases and already made some books and have future projects along the way. We'll be discussing those with four of the members of Atomic Revolver, B. Clay Moore, Jeremy Hahn, Seth M. Peck, and Jason Latour. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. They offer a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. And don't forget to visit their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your monthly pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com.
We are here live at the FX Con, and it's me again, John Suntrus from WordBalloon.com, and I have the pleasure to be speaking with many representatives, almost all of them, from the Atomic Revolver Studio from Kansas City that features some of my favorite writers and artists that I've enjoyed their separate books. I'm very happy that they're now all in a studio and working together on some great projects. I mean, these are friends that have gotten together, and I look forward to what they've got coming up. But today we're talking about their current books, among them 76 from Image, a great flip book featuring Jackie Karma by writer B. Clay Moore, and Cool by writer Seth Peck, and I'll let them talk about their artists, but I'm very happy to see the debut of the book, guys. It seems to be everything that you promoted online, and I remember seeing the sample art and hearing about the stories, and the first issue is out, and it looks beautiful, and it's a nice start to both stories, so congratulations.
Well, thanks.
Thank you, yeah.
Thank you very much.
People seem to dig it for the most part. So.
That's cool. So, Clay, let's start with you and Jackie Karma. What was the inspiration for the Kung Fu Master?
Oh, haven't we been through this before? just crazy. We have. So I'm going to be abbreviated, but I've always been into 70s culture and films and music and stuff. 70s comics in this vein generally sucked. I did. am I lying? I mean, Deadly Hands of Kung Fu was a cool book.
It was an excellent book.
But, most of them were just trying to cash in on a trend, and they blew. So, and most updates of them have not been that great either. So I didn't really, I just sort of thought I'd step away from, using comics as an influence and just kind of, plus I came up with the name Jackie Karma, which sounded pretty cool. So I applied it to the character. And actually, Latour and I were in at a con in Dallas, and he did a rough sketch based kind of on Chuck Norris, I think.
Who, Chuck Norris.
Yeah, who I can't stand, but Latour's worships at the feet of Chuck Norris.
Fantastic.
Well, that's why he's got a lion on his back, because I thought Chuck Norris is ridiculous, and there's no lion.
Speaking to the mic. Yeah, speaking to the mic, Jason. And by the way, I didn't introduce Jason Latour, artist, and Jeremy Hahn, artist, so the four of you are here.
Yes.
I'm not taking credit for that. That's all there.
Anyway, he did a loose design sketch, and then Ed Tatum, who I brought on board, sort of reimagined the character. And, one thing that I always thought was kind of funny is, like, in American versions of Kung Fu flicks and stuff is they sort of ignored, it's like trying to meld, white guys or black guys or this under the cool aspects of it. So it's only natural that our mighty Kung Fu warriors
blonde.
Yeah, it's a blonde dude. But blonde Anglo dude. But also I wanted to play, I wanted to play with 70s culture and also the characters originally were supposed to be like street fighters during kind of the flower power era in the late 60s. And so we flash back occasionally to the shirtless young Jackie and his partner Marcus in his African wear. And then on top of that, later on, we've got, there's a soul group that doubles as a street fighting unit that pops up. And we've got the mobsters and, what have you. But anyway, so really, it was just one to kind of... I've done books in the 40s, 50s, and 60s prior to now. Not much in the, in the 2000s, but... So I hadn't really done anything in the 70s, and And Seth was, I think Seth actually, I'd kind of been kicking this around loosely, and Seth had mentioned he had this idea for these bounty hunters set in the 70s. And
yeah, talk about cool, Seth. I mean, it's, you know, one thing I wanted to say, though, Clay, is that, and this will lead into Seth talking about cool, I always liked the look of a lot of those 70s books, not only the obvious of the great Paul Gulacy on, you know, Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, but you also can, who didn't turn off their cell phone? But also, sorry, mine's on too. Just nobody calls me. But no, I wanted to say the great tones that we saw, and especially like the Marvel magazines.
Right, right, right.
I mean, that was gorgeous art, and I'm glad to see that kind of reflected in cool stuff. So tell
us. No, I don't want to. I'm not trying to imply that everything that came out in the era sucked. Generally,
but those. No, you're right though.
You know,
those
I mean,
are
it's
the exceptions.
Like TV cashed in on kung fu stuff and really did it well, and you know, comics are the same way. It's just trying to jump on a trend.
Sure.
I think first and foremost, what we were trying to do is tell a good crime story with cool. Setting it in the 70s sort of gave it a little extra texture that maybe wasn't there before, but fashion being pretty cyclical, really, I almost think if you don't pay attention to the lack of maybe cell phone technology and maybe some of the cars used, you know, it really almost could have taken place now. One thing I didn't want to do was play up any kitsch elements of the 70s. It's not about, you know, there's not going to be disco dancing or, you know.
You see, now you're losing readers.
Yeah, yeah. There's no pet rocks or anything like that. So, you know, I don't want to poke fun at the era. I think, you know, if you look at, and like Clay said, I didn't want to draw any of my inspiration from necessarily from comics, not for any particular reason other than, you know, I wanted to do something that maybe was a little different than maybe stuff that had come before it. And I,
at the same time, I want to say we do enjoy all the reviews that any reviewer who reviews comics immediately tries to figure out which comic books you're, because I think most people that read comics haven't read or, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just funny to hear people talk about, you know, what comics they think you're aping or, you know.
Exactly.
Sure. Like, and sometimes I want to say, well, find the parallels for me, because I think, you know, you're seeing stuff that you imagine to be there because your frames of references are so limited. But
and I think, if you know, like, what I was looking at more was maybe some of the 70s films that I liked.
Am I right or am I right?
Like The French Connection or even, like, you know, like The Long Good Friday or some of that kind
Love
of stuff.
That movie.
Good 70s crime stuff. And maybe more like Gilmore Leonard, you know, Tarantino kind of stuff. One of the writers, somebody made the George Pelicanos connection, which I purposely have kept off. I've got it. King Sucker Man is the George Pelicanos book set in the 70s, and I've got it sitting there, and I'm waiting to read it after I finish school just because I didn't want to, you know, draw anything
I can appreciate
unintentionally
that.
Too much from it. But so really what we were going for was a good crime story, and I kind of talked it over with Ty Walker, who's the artist, and just right off the bat, he had an exact feel for what I was looking for, really captured all the elements I needed. Just an amazing artist, and somebody Clay had met in Toronto and hooked me up with for a short story we did in a backup issue of The Expatriate, and just really just a phenomenal guy as far as getting the mannerisms and the, you know, attention to detail in 70s settings and stuff. So you know, yeah, like Clay said, we wanted to take some of the stuff that should be cool about the 70s and not necessarily the, you know, the playing up the Brady Bunch angle or anything that you see a lot when it's, you know, when people do it in current film and TV and comics. But I, like Clay said, the reviews, you know, you get a lot of mixed. Some people it's too 70s. Some people it's not 70s enough.
Guys who were born in the 80s.
Yeah. Somebody made the comparison and Jackie Carmen, a poor man's.
Yeah, the best review was it's like a low rent.
It's a poor man's Power Man Iron Fist, which Clay's response was, what is a poor man's version?
Exactly.
Those weren't exactly, you know, the
Heroes for Hire boys.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
On Bleecker Street or whatever New York slum that they were
at. Any lower rent than the original.
So a fun book. Don't get me wrong. For fans of the book, I mean,
if people come into it and they you know, they like the pop culture elements of the 70s and stuff, that's fun too. But I think first and foremost, we were just trying to tell cool stories that are almost independent of decade, and you know. So hopefully we've succeeded. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you guys have lots of great artists on this book, and really not on this book, present company included, because both Jeremy and Jason know I am a huge fan of their work as well. Whether it's, you know, been on The Expatriate in Jason's case, and Battle Him, and you know, I Han, you know how I feel, Han.
That's why he's sitting at the other end of the table.
Yeah, I know. The restraining order keeps me away from Han, so I appreciate you boys putting that distance at a safe level. But I want to include you guys because let's talk. I know you're doing new Excalibur, or had finished Excalibur.
The book's been canceled, John. Don't you pay any attention?
Well, I saw the trade on his table, so
Just finished up. I've actually, let's see, in February, I've got a 8-page Marvel Comics Presents coming out.
Who is in that?
It's Captain America.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah.
Where is that? Obviously, that story is not in current continuity because of the death of Cap. So.
No, he's bringing it back in an 8-page Marvel.
Yeah.
That's a lot of responsibility, Tom. That's a lot of responsibility. No, what can you tell us about the story, if anything?
It's a great story. It basically features kind of bookends on Captain America and deals with a soldier during the...
It's on radio.
Who wrote the story?
Thank you.
Who wrote the story, Jeremy?
I did. No. I'm really going to flake out on his name.
You can't remember the guy? Name.
Which guy?
The guy that wrote the surrogates for Top Shelf.
Robert.
Oh, yeah.
And, all right, I'll answer that later.
We'll come in a robot voice.
I do know who he's talking about. That's the sad.
Vendetti, isn't it?
That sounds right. Also.
Yeah.
Something Robert Italian.
Robert De Niro.
He wrote the book and the 8-pager. And basically what it deals with is Captain America kind of bookending a guy that is also 4F.
Bookending?
He is on the beginning and the damn end of the thing.
It's a bad thing.
What the hell is that?
Yes. And...
Simply this interview...
I can edit, don't worry.
Oh shit.
But it's awesome, and yeah, read it.
Okay. Yeah. No, I've enjoyed your Marvel work so far, Jared. I mean, you've worked with Chris Gage and did that great Civil War Iron Man America issue, and the work you did with Chris Claremont as well on Excalibur.
That was nice of John to tell you who wrote that Captain America.
Because clearly I wasn't expecting Jeremy to remember, because they're in the rear view mirror at this point. I understand. He's got bigger and better things to do. I understand. including which, something he did write, and I want to talk about Narcoleptic Sunday, because...
Who drew that, Jeremy?
Jeremy didn't draw that, but go ahead.
Yes, that was drawn by Brian Koshak.
Very nice. No, it's that's great. And I wondered, Jer, how was that writing, and do you see yourself writing more in the future?
I really do. I've got about three things kind of that I've been slow cooking for a little while. I think having Brian work on that over the course of a year, it was kind of strange building up a story for so long. But it's something that I definitely want to do, and I see myself doing.
Can you talk about your new audiobook at all?
I'm going to talk about it a little bit. I mean, I'm doing a new Oni book that I am not writing and drawing. But it was from based on my story. It's going to be called The Hollows. It's a horror book. We're looking at, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get this thing done, but we're looking at about 200 pages.
Wow.
And it's going to be 6x9, kind of the
digest
format.
Okay.
And it's written, this is a great part, it's written by Colin Bunn, that wrote The Damned. And he is a redneck, let me tell you. Colin is a local St. Louis guy. And
if you haven't read The Damned,
it's
excellent book.
Remarkable book. Colin is a horror guy. I mean, basically, through and through, he is one of the few people that I can count on to have as bad a taste in movies as I have. And
that's saying something.
No, Colin likes horror, and he likes great horror. And
you met him in the Pumpkinhead fan club.
he shares a love of Lovecraft. And actually, the story that we're doing is very Lovecraftian. I don't really want to get too much into things because it is very early on in the process. And we're going to be doing a lot of promotion for the book over the next year. Oni is really very, very excited about it. And I'm just going to get the damn thing done now. So.
Well, and I wanted to move on to Latour because I know he's been doing some interior work with Hawaiian Dick.
No.
What did he do? Didn't he do was it a cover? Oh, it was the alternate cover. The current story, which is Screaming Thunder?
Yeah, Screaming Black Thunder.
Screaming Black Thunder.
John, have a copy.
Exactly.
Thank you, research. Buddy. Come on.
Thank you. No, I've enjoyed this. And I my last interview with Clay, as Word Balloon listeners know, was about the beginning of Screaming Black Thunder, and loved the first issue. Scott Chandler is the main artist on this story. But back to Jason. Yeah. I want to know what's coming up, Jason. What are you going on?
I'm basically working on an adaptation of War and Peace. Been working on it since I was about six.
Starring dogs.
Yeah. I guess I'll give you the short answer. I would prefer to give the long answer, but...
We would. What are you working on?
Well, the stuff that I can speak of is basically this summer, or hopefully this summer, I'm looking the most forward to is I've written a four-issue miniseries crime novel called Loose Ends.
Cool.
That's going to be through 12-gauge image. That's basically... my friend Chris Bruner and I have been slow cooking this thing for maybe like, since I met the guy, which is maybe like 5 years ago. And it's been an interesting process because it's gone through so many permutations and has kind of grown up with us.
And Chris Bruner, is like one of the great.
Yeah, in my opinion, in my humble, not so humble opinion, he's probably my favorite current working artist. And I say that before he ever agreed to do a thing with me. And maybe one of, and as a friend and peer, maybe one of the most influential people in terms of my own stuff, too. You know, just bouncing off ideas and being able to share process stuff with. It's been exciting to work on that with something that's so personal to you that you, slow cooking. And to be the guy who... I guess it's kind of, I was so wary for so long. Clay knows that I burned Clay's optics out with how many story ideas and plots I run by him all the time. And I've always been kind of wary of, I'm pretty confident of my own abilities, but I've always been wary of being that guy that steps into too much too soon.
Okay.
But I've come to the realization that as an artist, I'm never going to finish all the stories that I want to draw. There's a lot of things... The thing is, there's a lot of things that, as confident as I am as an artist, I can't bring to certain projects. And Chris is one of the guys whose ability is off the charts in terms of he can basically do anything that he puts his mind to. And so the story is basically it's a crime story in premise, but it's really, I guess, the biggest influences in the book to me personally are things like the Misfits and Hood and all those like 60s kind of like disillusionment movies.
Sure, like modern Western.
Yeah, like that's modern Western. It's kind of a modern Western set in the South about an Iraqi veteran who... starts dealing heroin, and I want to say, and it's got all the trappings of what I consider to be great crime stuff, genre stuff, like guns and girls and cool cars and everything.
Sure.
I really tried to infuse it with things that I think about on a day-to-day basis in terms of non-genre or non-entertainment issues.
Yeah, I know you've done like tons of research on the war and soldiers.
And it's been a really tough process. I don't want to go too much into that because it's really just an element of the book. But I really wanted to draw some parallels between I mean, it's if you don't, I'm kind of talking in circles now. So.
Like me.
Parallels between what?
I just movies like those old disillusioned kind of Western movies. Like one of the greatest things about Western, those kind of like 60s era Westerns, were that you kind of remove a lot of the
glamour,
you remove a lot of the trappings of what makes a Western visually.
It's like they deconstruct the Western.
Well, I don't necessarily think they deconstruct those Westerns. I think those old Westerns are more Westerns than a lot of Westerns were.
But they
get to the heart of the issues.
Right, without the Western trappings.
Yeah, the character motivations of things like changes in society. It seems like the best movies
they relate there to modern.
Relate to modern issues in terms of like when there's a giant political or social climate shift.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's what drives the book, but that's something that I definitely was interested in. So basically the plot is an Iraqi war veteran that comes back to his hometown, and we learn in the very first issue that he's on his way to make a heroin deal in Florida, and
which is where we are now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I wrote the book here, or most of the book has its origins here, so it's kind of weird for me to come here and talk about it for the first time.
That's cool.
It's really like it's a full circle journey of a guy who's basically trying to figure his life out, but is also caught in a pretty dicey heroin deal where he owes people some money and some product, but doesn't necessarily know if he wants to continue doing what he's doing anymore.
Very cool.
So I'll go in more, you know, when it comes closer to coming out, you know, hopefully I'll have a more concise answer for you.
All right, man. That sounds cool.
But other than that, like art-wise, I'm working on another book called Almighty, which is like a black superhero in an urban environment that's, which couldn't be more polar opposite than Loose Ends.
Yeah, that's true.
Basically, I've been trying to figure out how to explain what I'm going to try to do with that book. It's me and Robbie Rodriguez who...
Jason wanted to speak about his own experiences as a black youth in urban cities.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to the book about the redneck from the South.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with that.
Well, this just speaks to my schizophrenia, basically. I've been trying to come up with, like, the, you know, how everybody's got, like, the hook line for their project, and I figured Almighty's basically going to be if Jack Kirby brained himself with a 2x4 and then tried to write a spec script of The Wire.
It works. I want to talk about Sorrow, which Seth is scripting with Rick Remender, and you got the great Francesco Francavilla, who really just kind of came on the scene on a small book called The Black Coat, and I think has really excited a lot of independent followers with his style, and Sorrow is no exception. It's a gorgeous book, and I really like it.
Yeah, Francesco has a great kind of a visual style to his stuff that's different from stuff you see in your typical, you know, Marvel DC mainstream book, but it's a perfect fit for certain genres, and Sorrow was definitely one. We wanted to go with kind of the old Rick's vision was sort of an old, eerie, creepy magazine type of look.
Yep.
And Francesco really nailed it. And the other book he's getting ready to do, he just finished the fourth issue of Sorrow. Three issues are in stores now, and the fourth issue should be out here in a couple weeks. But he's starting with Matt Wagner, and I don't remember the name of the other writer, sorry, but he's doing Zorro, which is sort of his, like, dream project. And even on his website, you know, as far back ago as at least a year, he had done, just for fun, had done a Zorro story. So, but when Rick brought him on for Sorrow, Rick sort of came to me with the basic premise of Sorrow and asked if, you know, if I wanted to collaborate on it and maybe flesh it out.
He's very familiar with Sorrow as a concept.
Yeah, exactly. Unhappiness in general.
tell us about all the sad things in your life. Sad.
Yeah. But he kind of came to me with, you know, the half the idea, and kind of originally I was going to work on an arc on one of his ongoing series, and it just time-wise didn't work out, so we still wanted to do something together, and Sorrow was kind of the result of that. And
it's been a lot of fun. I'm not a horror movie guy. You know, Jeremy's, like Jeremy was saying, he knows, you know, he watches every horror movie. I'm kind of the opposite. I haven't seen that many. You know, so Rick kind of basically, we sat down and started talking about
Eyes.
Yeah, I saw the Hills Have Eyes last night. So
the new one, the new one or the old
one? The new one,
So. And then more hills have more eyes.
Yeah, so these hills also have eyes.
There are a lot of eyes in these hills, too.
Yeah,
and these hills have teeth.
But Rick and I sat down and started talking
about... Nose over there?
Started talking about what we found creepy, and Possession was one of the things that we both found kind of creepy, and movies like The Exorcist that we had seen as kids, and, you know, Possession is one of those things that's like...
9/10 of the law.
Yeah. If you put a gun to my head, I probably wouldn't believe that it's real, but I also am afraid to say that I don't believe it because I don't want to be proven wrong.
Talking Possession?
Yeah. And ghosts and
how
stuff.
How would you be proven wrong exactly?
What if I were possessed?
Are you?
I don't want to. Well, you never know. So we kind of played at that angle, and Twin Peaks and kind of the David Lynch kind of stuff that we found creepy, small deserted towns, you know, isolation, you know, that they use a lot in horror movies of kind of being stranded somewhere with you know, sort of the unknown. So we kind of, you took those elements into it. Francesco came on board and really brought the visual style that we wanted, and it was a lot of fun for me to write, and you know, working with Rick, you've talked to Rick before. I mean, yeah. Rick's just a fun guy to be around.
It's like a party every minute.
Yeah.
And concepts, just every, he has the most original concepts. And, well, they're actually, in fairness, they're not original concepts, but he puts the Remender twist on them, but it's just so concept heavy. He always has a new idea, and they're in every genre you can think of, from superhero to sci-fi to horror, and it's amazing. There's three.
Yeah, and Rick really, I mean, of all the guys I know, has really, I mean, he really wants to see genres used more in comics other than superheroes. And nothing against superheroes.
Not at all. And so Rick's new book, The Atom, is coming out.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
And the Ed Lee as well. Yeah.
And, but, you know, Ed Lee, right.
Yeah, Rick has a, you know, a love for, like, the, you know, the old sci-fi stuff.
Sure.
You know, that he's, you know, with Fear Agent, you know, is a love letter to that kind of stuff.
I'm going to get a phone call from Rick after this.
because making fun of him. Rick is awesome.
Yeah. Oh, and well, also, Clay, I mean, that's what initially attracted me to your work.
Yes.
Was the non-superhero stuff. I love Hawaiian Dick and
love
Battle Him. Love The Leading Man, the second book that you collaborated with Jeremy on.
He's really going to hate Dick Man.
No, but then again, I mean, it was funny. I remember you even talking about some other, you know, concepts, original superhero concepts. One thing you've got that is coming out very soon is Superman Confidential.
Yeah.
Working with Phil Hester and Andy Parks on the art.
Yes.
And that's great. I mean, I think everyone's, you know, pleased to see that you're getting a shot at the DCU. So, and my God, the biggest property that they have. So tell me about your Superman story.
It's, that's just basically an early story of Jimmy Olsen and Superman's relationship. And the story, the idea I had was that I would sort of introduce the Signal Watch, which since I pitched and wrote the story, I guess they've already, I think Kurt Busiek has done a story about that not too long ago, but this doesn't necessarily clash with that story.
I like Busiek, your notes. Shortly after you came up with the idea.
I only mentioned that because some people were asking me questions about, well, how does this work with Busiek's story? Because, anyway, now I'm in quicksand. So Jimmy Olsen, basically the idea is that Superman is kind of new to Metropolis, and Jimmy Olsen is a pain in the ass. And, you know, he, all of a sudden, Jimmy's trying to be super cub reporter, is like, wow, I got this, like, angel over my shoulder, so anytime I get myself in trouble, he's going to pop in and save the day. And, you know, Superman gets tired of that, so...
it's a lot about you and your kids, right?
Except for the saving the day part. That basically that's it, and then Superman kind of figures out how he can communicate with Jimmy, and one of the old school Superman villains is sort of like a reintroduction or kind of a restating of his origin. And the covers have giant toys on them, so you might be able to guess who the villain is. it's just a fun, and Phil and Andy are just, I just happened to ask Andy. I knew that that Ant thing they were doing at Marvel was being canceled, and they had
the irredeemable Ant-Man for people who...
What's that?
I said the irredeemable Ant-Man.
Right, yeah, that one. And, you know, I thought maybe they'd have some free time on their hands, and I just kind of said, hey, Andy, you thinking you think Phil does a cool Superman? And they were like, yeah, we could probably fit that in. So in between Phil writing 60 issues of Witchblade and drawing 10 other things, they managed to. It's great. It's been awesome. I mean, it's one of those things where my first two DC projects, I've been allowed to sort of bring the artist on board that I wanted to work with. There hasn't been any heavy hand from editorial, and it's been a really easy experience. It's been fun. So doing that in a JSA classified arc,
featuring
with Wildcat, and actually as Jeremy killed New Excalibur, I just saw that they've solicited the new issue, my third issue of JSA classified as the final issue. So that makes it a collector's item.
You and I should work on something.
You guys are ringing on the curtain on the JSA classified. Is that the? It's the final arc, yeah.
Wow.
But it's also the best arc.
Don't get, hey man, I'm a huge Wildcat fan. Being a big boxing fan.
I think what happened was they saw what we were doing and we're like, come on, there's no way. So nobody wanted to follow us. But it's like Wildcat. The idea was originally to kind of reset Wildcat. It's quite like everybody seems to dig Wildcat as a character. I mean, they've used him in JSA Classified at least 3 or 4 times, but he's never really been given a fair shot on his own, I don't think. And so when Dan talked to me about it initially, he was kind of like, well, instead of just doing another story, let's try to make this a story that might work as a springboard. And I don't know that anything will springboard from it, but the idea is to kind of examine why Wildcat does what he does. Why he's been doing it for 60 years or whatever. So Catwoman appears, and a Canadian artist named Ramon Perez is just phenomenal. He's doing the pencils and inks, and if nothing else, I don't think the Wildcat has ever looked better than he looks in this book. That's not hyperbole. I think I
wholeheartedly agree with that.
What's that?
I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's great looking stuff, and I'm hoping that, Ramon's a guy I've known for years, and I've always, he's one of these guys I just don't understand why he's not doing more work, because and it's a lot of it's just his, he's doing his own thing up there, but everything he's shown me on this book has just been fantastic. So
it's too bad he has to work with your scripts.
Yeah, well, yeah, everybody has freedom to rewrite my stuff if they want to, Jason.
Is it freedom? I thought it was an inalienable right.
Yeah. Jason and I did a book called The Expatriate together.
I remember it well.
We did a whole lot of different directions. And actually, we're talking about maybe revisiting The Expatriate and trying to...
Yeah, as it stands right now, there's maybe 12 pages left in the first arc.
Keeping you awake, John?
I know, you're doing fine.
And I've actually kind of... God, I didn't even want to talk about this, but I think it's worth talking about now. Because if I the more I say it, the more likely it is it'll get done, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Say Steel City Hawk.
I've actually there's only about 12 pages left and we
great.
And I've actually
John's trying to prove he's awake.
No, I'm
awesome.
I'm very happy about that because I enjoyed the
X rocks.
I enjoyed The Expatriate, and I was sorry that it kind of drifted off as I have during this panel. And I'd want to point out that I'm happy that it is back on schedule as I am, and that it's coming up.
Sorry,
it's not at all. It's a wonderful
video.
Story. No, actually, it's video as well. So
that's right.
I think the guys got me rolling my eyes and actually like slumping over.
So that's
Honestly, Expatriate is a great story, and I really was looking forward to the finish. So that's great to hear.
Well, we're going to try to wrap it up.
We're going to at least try and wrap up the first arc. And it really just occurred to me that it's there's no reason not to. And I think it's the kind of thing where if we do finish it, when I do finish it, that it's going to be it's going to read well in a trade, and it's a cool. I'll be proud of clearing out,
And Jeremy would like to talk about something.
Please, yes.
Go ahead, Jason. Finish what you're saying.
Yeah. Jason, we want to break into the song, right?
we're going to try to wrap The Expatriate up in a way that would springboard.
That's a ways, basically.
Well, it captured a very specific style of art from the 60s that it clicked with me. Because
I
really
appreciate
was,
that. And as the funny thing about it is it was really, you can, if you know, have you ever heard the expression that you can read a lot about a person and their work? I think if you were to look at the first page of that book and the very last page of it when I'm done, you'll probably see, they'd probably throw me in a loony bin.
It's all over the place.
It's definitely something. But, personally, I think it's an interesting, as an artist, to see. I guess it is growth, but it's an interesting thing for me to have a snapshot of the first book that I ever saw in print.
Okay.
To go through such a long, drawn-out learning process that I think was invaluable in the long run. And I think that alone, for me personally, is enough reason to try and get it done.
I've heard rumblings of other possible projects, and I don't know how much we can talk about those.
Yeah. Well,
potential rumblings.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I can tell you what, just briefly, I'm
please
doing a couple things for Wildstorm coming up soon, and next month they'll announce and solicit a new book that I'm doing. At this point, I can't really talk much about.
Okay.
Actually, that's the Wildstorm thing I'm doing, and then aside from that, just because he's talked about it on his blog and stuff, Tony Harris and I are doing a creator-owned book together, probably at the end of this year or next year. It's kind of a pulpish thing that we hope to do for quite a while. Tony brought the concept to me, and as we get closer to that, I can kind of talk a little more about it. But that, I'm pretty jazzed about that project. It's been a lot of fun putting it together. But we were talking about possibly working together on something, too. Jeremy, we've kind of debated whether we're going to talk much about this.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We are, as a group, Atomic Revolver has been kind of throwing back and forth the idea of, we always work together on some level. You know, I work with Clay on stuff. Clay works with Jason on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, and we were just saying, why don't we just do an exclusive Atomic Revolver anthology? And the plan is, and we are working our asses off toward it, we are planning on having it out for this summer.
Great.
Might as well set it down.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
There you go.
I'll put the gauntlet.
You know, it is...
It's all six of us.
It's all six of us. Okay. Basically working... a writer teaming up with an artist,
yeah.
And then it'll be each of us handling a story that we've got.
It'll be three original concepts.
Okay.
Seth and Jeremy are working together, and then Jason Aaron and Jason Latour will be working together, and then Tony Moore and I will be working together. And we each have an original concept that we're introducing in this book, and we're in the process. I mean, I think we're pretty sure that we're going to manage to get it done and everything. I know Jason just went exclusive with Marvel, so we need to make sure that that's going to work.
Okay, congratulations, Jason. That's great.
Jason Aaron.
Jason Latour will be exclusive.
I'm purchasing Marvel.
Yes, of course. Jason, you can't hear Jason. He's sleeping over there.
Yeah, exactly.
And Tony, Tony's doing his DC and Dark Horse stuff.
His
too, so.
DC and Dark Horse.
Well, it's Vertigo.
It's kind of a chance for us to each sort of introduce individual, new concepts that, maybe as a kind of a testing ground to see what the response is. And, we'll try and throw some extra stuff in there as there's time. And like Jeremy said, on some scale, we kind of always work together anyways. If not, one writing and one handling the art chores, then it's bouncing ideas back and forth.
It could be nobody gives a shit about this anthology, but we're acting like they will. So.
Yeah. I do think it's going to be fun, and it's a chance for me and Jeremy to work on a concept that we've literally probably been talking about for 5 years.
Revenge Dog.
No, that's Jason Aaron. Jason Latour's.
That's trademark.
But
what about the boxer, Seth?
The boxer is actually, I'm glad you mentioned it. Is something that it was kind of the first concept Ty and I sort of tried our hands working together on, and. It's the next thing that Ty and I are going to work on after 76.
Okay.
Again, it's kind of early in the stages as far as who's going to be publishing and stuff, but Ty definitely wants to revisit it. I definitely want to revisit it.
What is the boxer?
The boxer is, we introduced the character in a little backup in Expatriate, and we've actually done a second backup story that will run somewhere at some point, but it's the story of a former club boxer in London that is basically a bagman for the London mob, and
it's sort of a character that we sort of created as a way to do some different short stories and a different ongoing sort of...
He works at UPS.
Yeah, an original graphic novel type of thing. And Ty really has come into his own so much on 76 that by the time we wrap these 8 issues, you know, he's going to really hit his stride, I think, is you know, found his niche. And
as a human being.
So, yeah, as a man. And
once we let him out of that cage.
So, and yeah, we'll definitely be coming to the back of the boxer. It's a concept I'm in love with. It's
really, really, really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And
it's way rad.
Yeah, we've sort of just been waiting for 76 to wrap, and Ty will definitely be coming back.
Seth has had a boxer like plot for this, basically a graphic novel he's had in mind for years. That's just, it's...
Well, I remember the Ash Candy, I want to say, in 2006.
Yeah, and in fact, we included the second boxer backup was
The 76
preview book that had the Jack and Carver.
There you go, yeah.
It's funny you talk about these things that you've done. You've worked on them for so long before, you know, 76 came out about 3 weeks ago, and literally the art in the first issue has been done for a couple years almost. Yeah. So,
when I remember, that was your frustration, Clay, with really most of 2007. You had so many things that were really kind of in the production line.
Well, I mean, DC contacted me at the end of 2006, and the two first things I had approved for them come out next month.
Right.
You know, it's like I spent all 2007 working on... You know, Image, DC. Oh, I've got an Oni graphic novel I've been slowly working on called Billy Smoke. I would hesitate to give you a date on that, but actually, there's stuff you forget about when you've got so much stuff piled up. It's like, I think I owe somebody a script.
And it's kind of that, you know, behind the curtain thing of comics. I think you don't realize how much time and energy goes into producing a single book. You know, it's different when it's, you know, maybe Marvel and DC, where you've got, you know teams of editors and assistants and everything else that shepherd a book through its creation. But, you know, with any of these books, with any of these Image books, you know, you're really, it's the creative team on the cover is really who's responsible for pretty much
and having said everything. It's something else that just as long as we're just kind of chatting. We were talking about this last night, and there was some podcast did a favorable review of Hawaiian Dick in 76, and they pointed out something. I was talking about this earlier, so it's on my mind, but, you know, I know a lot of people just don't want to hear about it if it doesn't tie into some colossal event with superheroes they've been reading about since they were 6, and I understand that, but by the same token, you know, the effort we put into these books is, I hope that people flip through them, give them a shot, and people who do read the books, it's nice to hear when people appreciate the fact that, like, Hawaiian Dick has its own, I don't have a copy, but it has its own design sense. It's got all kinds of crazy extra design elements that you just can't do in mainstream books or books that have any advertising. Stephen Griffin, the original artist on Hawaiian Dick, has done a backup story that he's written and drawn, as well as coloring a lead story. We've got, you know, just insanely designed extra pages with information about the book. 76, we've got, you know, inside, outside cover, soundtrack listing.
Yes, I was going to talk about that.
Well, it's just...
it's more flavor.
Yeah, I guess we do it because we want the books, because we can do it, and there's no reason to short the reader.
You know, I mean, while you're BSing about it. I mean, and on you know, there's also the idea that you don't have... you know, like when you wrote, I'll ask you the question. You wrote Superman, right?
Right.
It was probably a little bit faster to move through a Superman script because you don't have to invent Metropolis from the ground up.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, that's true.
You know, and that's not taking anything away from people that do Marvel DC work on the month. It's just a different
animal. Right. Well, and that's
a completely different animal. And
the great thing about, the nice thing about working with Superman is you understand the readership, understands the mythos, you know, gets,
right.
You know,
right. It's a shared, right. It's a shared
I just meant in terms of, like, production time, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like you don't have to go in and say, well, who,
right.
You know, how do I even set up who Clark Kent is? You've got the shorthand available.
The first thing you have to do, and we're talking about this today too, the first thing you have to do when you create your own book, and this is advice for the countless thousands that are pitching everything under the sun to Image and places like that, you have to create a world, and you have to establish the rules of the world within your first story or first issue.
Sure.
And you have to play by those rules. And it's hard, a lot harder than it sounds, and a lot of people just can't figure out how to do that, I think, because they're leaning so heavily on stuff they've read, or they're trying to bring
you know, they're trying to basically retread existing concepts. That is, I would say, like 90% of the pitches I've ever read are the same shit I've seen before. 75% of those pitches are, you know, are awful to begin with. But it's the original. It's the original pitch where you really get a clear view. This thing with like Owen Dick. Like when we were first pitching around the Hollywood studios and everything, which was not even a consideration when we created the book, but people who glommed onto the book were like, yeah, we really, you've got a world, you know, you created a universe.
Absolutely.
So even if we mess with your story, we, you know, the world you've created is so well established that we think that'll come through, you know. And but to Jason's point, you got to get a story up and running. You can't just start the story and not establish.
Well, and it's not a what you just said is not even a, it's not a diss. It shows.
Yeah,
that's why those original superhero books, I think, have such legs today.
It's true.
Because they really create a world.
Right. They're built on very strong foundations.
And they're built on foundations of things that have not, you know, I guess nuance isn't a good word for the early stuff, but they definitely have a. They like Marvel's New York breathes.
Well, and I think when you blow up these ages-old concepts and try to start from scratch, the reason a lot of it doesn't work is because the foundation was so solid at the beginning.
Yep.
You've got to create a stronger foundation.
Right. People will want
to
let go.
All you're doing is people are just going, when are we going to get back? You know, okay.
Right.
The event we're waiting for now is a return to what we had before, because it's hard to rechannel things in a better direction, I think.
But to stand out, you need not only a different concept, because there are a glut of lesser superhero books out there that are not being made by DC and Marvel, some also being made by DC and Marvel.
So you've already used the term lesser there. I mean, it's not necessarily lesser, though.
Well, but no, but I think they, I don't mean
perceptually.
Well, but I mean, some of them are derivative.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And that's what I was going to say.
But
that to the credit of these books, though, you've got genres that haven't been touched in a long time.
I'm not going to pretend 76 isn't derivative of certain things, but
no, but it's a very distinctive look,
right,
that goes beyond the tropes of the basic genre.
Yeah.
Well, I'm complimenting it.
I refuse to accept your compliment.
I'm complimenting you. No, and I
screw you anyway.
No, and Steven's palette for Hawaiian Dick was one of the things that immediately caught my eye.
Oh yeah, that's essential to the world.
Right. Yeah.
In fact, I mean, I'll be honest, you know, I know Hawaiian Dick is, for the people out there who actually followed it, it's, you know, when that book came out initially, just to be frank about it, the sales were pretty great. I mean, in relative terms, especially for a book, at the time we were completely unknown.
Yeah.
And the concept alone, you know, it's a Hawaiian 50s detective story, not exactly
what everybody's waiting for,
Marvel collects in omnibuses, but the sales were pretty strong, and the buzz was fantastic. And, you know, we screwed the pooch on the book by being so late with it in the first series, and the second series was even worse. And we've tried to set up all the conditions to make sure that the third series doesn't run into those pitfalls. But at the same time, you know, I never want to get into a situation where the book becomes so late it's returnable, or it's 2 months later, this or that. And I want to try to make sure we're aware of what we're doing as we solicit stuff. But a lot of work goes into this book that I'm not going to scrimp on, because ultimately the book is going to be what it is, whether it came out on time or 3 weeks late. And I know, and I am doing the best I can, and I understand the frustrations, particularly of retailers. Trust me on that. But at the same time, like, I can't lose Steven as an influencer, as a designer or anything on the book, just because I think his identity, you know, I mean, he's infused so much of his identity into it. Now, if Steven doesn't want to do the book anymore, we'll do what we can. He's already set the tone for the book.
Yes.
And others, you know, my good example, Jason Latour over here did the second cover for the first issue, and it's all Jason, but at the same time, he took some of his color cues and everything from what Steven had done on the earlier cover.
Certainly.
So as long as I have guys that are as smart as Jason working on the book, you know, we could probably continue it. But
can you please send me a copy of that?
There's one right there.
There you go.
I mean that audio.
Edit that right out.
iTunes, wordballoon.com, you know.
Well, intelligence is a relative thing.
Wait, you never asked me to do anything on my dick.
Where, guys? You said you didn't want to draw Mo.
I know you. We've talked before. Well, how did you and Jason hook up, Clint?
It's funny because it actually kind of bookends into into what you're talking about the color on the book.
Yeah.
It was the first time the reason I picked up Hawaiian Dick was because it stood out on the stand.
There you go.
And from there, I guess he was looking for somebody to take over to do Battle Hymn.
Yeah, there's a message board that a friend of mine named Rick Cortez has. I don't know if he still moderates it, but he moderated for
that's
a long
the
time.
Drawing board.
Right, it's the drawing
board.
Drawing board, okay. And
.com or .org.
At the time, it was. I think it's. I don't know.
I still go.
Yeah. But there were just a ton of talented guys on there, and I said, you know what? So I'm looking for somebody who would be interested in doing a World War II superhero thing. And Jason replied. And I think Jeremy and I had already. By the time I was really talking to Jason, I think Jeremy and I had already. It's kind of complicated how Jeremy ended up doing Battle Hymn, but.
Well, I think Toby was still involved.
Oh yeah, that's right. Toby Cypress was originally going to draw.
Oh, okay.
Was going to draw it when it was called Anthem. And so Jason and I just kind of hit it off and started talking. And we really, before we even talked about working together or something else, we just kind of communicated because we had, you know, because Jason needed someone to talk to.
Yeah.
I was always online.
Very low.
And in the meantime, Jeremy and I actually had talked about doing a World War II flying book. And we were on our way down to Dallas, and it became clear that Toby wasn't going to be able to do what was then Anthem. And
and I don't know how, I don't remember why exactly.
Well, so
I guess we had already maybe started planning on doing it. I was in grad school at the time.
But you started going to grad school.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so we were originally talking about doing Expatriate as like a series of 56-page graphic novels, and it was originally going to be more of a straight kind of, and then, well, actually, this is kind of funny, actually, we were in Baltimore, and we were talking about doing just kind of this straight action adventure thing, and we hadn't pitched it to Image, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And we were talking to Kirkman about it.
We're talking to Kirkman and Tony about it.
And Tony Moore. And Robert Kirkman was telling me, hey, he's the one who told us we should do an ongoing.
Right.
And I just came up with, literally sitting in a bar, I said, okay, here's an idea. What if the hero ends up. If you haven't read the book, this will spoil it, but if you haven't read the book, screw you. But no, I'm kidding, really. Because that would apply to 99% of the reading population. But anyway, I just said basically.
There's a sci-fi twist that comes into play that can't come.
Yeah.
It almost comes out of the field.
And I just came up with this insane idea in the bar. I was like, what if this happens?
Yeah,
Kirkman's like, you've got to do that. That's what you got to do. And I talked.
And when somebody has that high and lonesome sound.
Oh, yeah. Tony's just sitting there going,
like,
yeah,
a siren.
You should do that.
My ears are bleeding.
What are you doing? But so then I called Stevenson, and Eric's like, I think I've already approved this book because Robert called me. And he's like, oh, you got to hear this book, Clayton.
Oh, that's really nice that he did that. That's great.
And they did a preview in The Walking Dead, actually.
That's right. I remember that.
And we had trouble with Expatriate. But it almost brings the story full circle because. When you talk about like production stuff, that's
right.
A book where it definitely, you know, speaks to the naivety of being a first-time creator and not understanding what you're capable of and what your best working process is. And you know, I'm still like really, I'm not that slow and I'm not fast, but I'm really still suffering under a lot of, not suffering under, it's not like somebody's got a stone on my back or something, but there's still a perception that I don't do a lot of work. And one of the reasons is because I've learned from from that experience the response that people will have if you don't get a book out on time. So I almost feel like as somebody that's trying to As somebody that's trying to slowly create a career, it's more important to,
you know, and just to
know what you're doing.
Because these guys haven't all tuned their own horns correctly. Jason's also doing, I think he's going to do a longer form book that you can't really
talk about. Well, I can't talk about
it. Okay. But he is going to do something that you're going to draw, probably. This was, and what's up with Space Motherfuckers?
Is that really what it's called? That's fantastic.
He's got a strip that he's done called.
It's funny because.
Is that what you handed to Matt Groening back the way back when?
No. Well, it's the same characters, though.
Oh, okay.
It's funny. Basically, I'm doing. Where I started doing strips was in college. I had been reading comics forever, and so I started doing a newspaper strip. And you know, you get so, like, serious about, like comics. Like, I want to. Everything's got to be like life or death, or you have to work out everything. And I'm as serious as it gets, like almost way too serious. And one day I woke up and said, man, I don't have fun anymore. You know, like it's like, and as a result, I'm trying to do this strip called, it's basically called Space Motherfucker.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get the inflection right.
And it's
very different.
It's about two dudes that are stranded on Mars in the future when George Bush is the emperor. And it's basically decided that it's time to patrol our borders.
Okay.
And these two dudes get sent up into space off one of those, like, amazing, like, marine recruiting trip videos, you know, with the dude with the sword slaying dragons and shit. And
they were expecting high adventure.
They're expecting. But, you know, they get up there and they actually kind of like it, except for the fact that there's fucking nothing to do. And, you know, I know if I was stranded in space with an automatic weapon, that the first thing I'd do is unload on something. And so the premise is that they basically blow up their spaceship, and they're trapped on
with a robot, right?
Yeah, they're trapped on Mars with a robot and automatic weapons and a limited supply of food. And
One of the first images they showed me that made me laugh was they had, like, painted an ass crack on the back of the robot, like, you wouldn't notice, you know?
It's it's basically, I think the high concept for it is purgatory for dumb white America. And I fall into that category. I mean, I went to college for 6 years. So.
Well, there you go.
Right.
So did I. I did 5, so don't feel bad, boys. Jared, I wanted to ask you, because in the case of The Leading Man, the concept started with the artist, and you went to Clay as a writer to kind of make it happen. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did it a lot. A lot of those concepts, like The Leading Man and like The Hollows and things, you know, it's a shell of an idea, but I think most of the people that I've had the opportunity to work with Clay and now with Cullen.
And that guy who wrote that Captain Marcus.
Yeah, what's his head? I've had the opportunity to work with people that were perfectly okay with me walking in with an idea and then expanding upon it. And I think Leading Man is a really great example of a concept that I had a shell of an idea, and it was just from a dumb conversation with my brother late one night. And, you know, and then I took it to Clay, and we kind of had this back and forth where we expanded on the idea over the course of, you know, a couple of weeks. And
you took me forever to come on board fully because I was so busy.
And he also was just like, this is terrible.
I don't want to interrupt you, but it brings up an interesting point that, like, when you're talking about creation stuff, like production versus, you know, production on big two books versus production on a... like an image book.
Right.
You said when you do a new project, you've been lucky enough to work on your creator-owned stuff with people that you can talk to.
Right.
And I think that really plays a factor in why doing creator-owned stuff is so fulfilling.
Oh, definitely.
Well, that was the advantage I was talking about doing Superman and Wildcat with guys, you know, Phil and Andy and Ramon, guys I know and can communicate.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, even in a creator or in a non-creator-owned environment, you were lucky enough to work with guys.
I've been on the other end of that, too, where it's like I'm working on... I've had great experiences, and I've had really not-so-great experiences working in, you know, really mainstream stuff. And I think that there is the opportunity for an open dialogue with certain people, and then other times there's just not whatsoever.
Oh, sure.
And on that note...
That is your touch, Jerry.
Sorry. Where was I?
You were talking about how awesome I am.
Oh, yeah.
Florida.
Yeah. No, but I've had the opportunity to work with lots of different types of situations, and whenever you're working on a work for hire book and you're given a date that it's due and you're given a script and that's it, that's how it works, it is not as much fun and it is not as fulfilling and it's tough. And you know, I you look at your work sometimes, or people look at your work and they're like, that's just, something's wrong with that. And I think it's a lot of times whenever you don't have the opportunity to go in with someone and feel mutually enthusiastic about it.
And I mean, I don't necessarily, I obviously don't have that experience, you know, because I haven't done a whole lot of work for hire, but like, obviously,
oh, sorry, you should do it.
Well, I mean, I've done stuff in other capacities, but I've never done it as basically being one of the driving forces on my book, you know.
And also, something I guess, this is going way back to John's initial question that kind of led to this rant, tirade, blah, blah, blah. You know, Clay, last year, that was kind of like it for you. You had been building up so much stuff. And in a way, Jason and I are kind of in that situation right now. You know, it's like we're in that weird holding pattern, building up stuff, and it's like
we've stepped in the production.
It's really strange to be in a situation where you have so many people going, "So what are you doing right now?" And you're like, "I cannot talk about a thing." and you know, right now, both Jason and I are in that situation, and we will, you know, let everybody know very, very soon what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, like, the one thing Clay was hitting at that I actually, like, didn't say is I'm basically doing something for the big two, but it's...
Within the next year, I mean, in all honesty, I mean, Jason Aaron's exclusive of Marvel's been announced. He's doing Ghost Rider, Wolverine. Tony is still doing Fear Agent and
Exterminators.
Exterminators is wrapping up, and he's got stuff on the horizon after. Okay. I mean, in the next year, you know, we'll all continue, I think, to be doing, you know, our own stuff, but at the same time, we'll all be doing projects that are, you know, of a much higher profile.
That's cool.
You know, and so. You know, hopefully that.
Well, it's an interesting dialogue. It'd be interesting to talk to us in a year.
Yeah.
And, oh, okay.
When you won't be able to talk to anyone.
Exactly. That's when you get to be people.
Exactly. Yeah.
When I'm serving you your biggie sized fries.
Well, I just think it'd be.
an interesting to ask the same questions or to try and have the same dialogue about creator owned versus.
Yeah. Or getting your start.
What?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm not even predicting that, like, that it's going to be like, oh, we're a big success kind of thing. But I think it would be interesting just as a question to see if people are more or less jaded or more or less cynical or even more honest.
Well, we'll be able to compare it in a year's time. And in the meantime, we've got 76 coming out and Sorrow wrapping up shortly.
Yep, and 76, one thing I will mention is we're very far ahead on it as far as art, so it will be on time.
Wonderful. That's excellent, man. And enjoying Screaming Black Thunder and Hawaiian Dick, and I haven't mentioned his name yet, but Scott Chandler doing a wonderful job continuing the series, and looking forward to the DC and Marvel projects to come from the Atomic Revolver guys.
If anybody's listened this far into the cast, please check out the Superman Confidential and the JSA Classified stories, because I think those books have had a lot of great stories, and we're following a Darwin Cook story, so
sure,
and Tim Sale, but you know, I'm curious to see what people's reactions will be who have followed my other stuff, to see if they think that, you know, I've managed to entertain them in the same way. You know, like Matt Fraction's stuff that he's doing for Marvel, I think there's a lot of similarity to the stuff he was doing before he got there.
Yes.
And I think that's an important thing as guys move into, you know.
Yeah, it is your voice intact,
right, exactly,
as you move in onto these mainstream projects. No, I agree. And specifically in the case of Superman Confidential, seeing the art, really, Hester and Parks are doing a great job. And if you like what they did on Nightwing and Green Arrow, you're really going to be surprised at this Superman. It's a very classic take on Superman that is still unique and one we haven't seen in a long time in the monthly books, and it's going to be fun, and I look forward to reading this Jimmy Olsen story and Superman and the Toy Man, because I know who the bad guy is. So, but it's cool stuff. So guys, seriously, always good work. You know I'm a fan of your guys' stuff, and that's why it's always a pleasure seeing you and reading your stuff, so and enjoying your art as well. So,
and now it's on to the sauna.
Okay, can we sit
and lock the room up, guys?
Can we sing Don't Fear the Reaper, like I asked? We need more cowbell.
Now we're going to have to pay for the license of that song.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, fellas. And now the maids can come in and clean the room.
Thank you very much.
So keep your eye out for some of the projects coming from the Atomic Revolver guys. We mentioned them here on the podcast, and future ones along the way as well. Word Balloon is brought to you by In Stock Trades at InStockTrades.com. They offer a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. And don't forget to visit their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your monthly pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the Internet. You can find us at Newsarama.com. We're also at comicspace.com/wordballoon, myspace.com/wordballoon. You can find us at iTunes. If you just search for the word Word Balloon or words, you'll be able to find our RSS feed there as well. And also at all the other podcatching sites and aggregators like Podcast Alley and Podcast Pickle and Odeo. Any questions or comments on the show, you can always reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.